I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
This is a special edition of the Thursday live cast. I think we can just call it the Thursday recorded cast because it's not really live tonight. That's issues on my end. I had some house issues earlier tonight, so we weren't able to go live at 10 when Impact went off the air. And admittedly, Andrew Socek, I did not really see much of the last half hour of the show. I had it on. I wasn't really paying much attention. But we'll talk Impact Wrestling tonight on this edition of the Thursday live cast. I am Mike McMahon with Andrew Socek. And Andrew, let's start the show by doing what we've done, I feel like, a lot in the first year that we've been doing the live cast here on Thursdays. And that's talk about Impact, but not anything to do with what's going on inside the ring, because we have another management shakeup and more executive vice presidents hired. What were your thoughts this week when you heard the news that, I mean, Scott D'Amore has been around in the company for a while. He's kind of already been in this role, but Scott D'Amore officially named executive vice president along with Don Callis coming on board, being named executive vice president. Kind of seems like they're going to, they are going to report directly to Ed Nordholm. And it seems like Don Callis and Scott D'Amore are going to be running the day-to-day operations of Impact moving forward.
I guess my initial thought was this is a good thing. They've made some many questionable hirings in the past. Just bringing in Callis, I would say I'm probably more excited than when Jeff Jarrett and Mantell came back, and I was lukewarm excited for that, just because I thought it would bring some stability. And of course, this may have been their most chaotic year ever. Behind the scenes. But yeah, I mean, Callis has a great mind for the business. He's been just really interesting. I've been reading up on interviews whenever he does one over at PW Podcast. He did a Steve Austin show a few months ago. Of course, he's over in New Japan Pro Wrestling doing announcing there. And, you know, just like hearing him on Killing the Town with Lance Storm. I think this is a great move. I think I emailed you about this, but whenever I get excited about anything in Impact, it turns out badly. But, you know, maybe if they found some stability and those two are able to work together, I think this is a pretty solid. What did you think?
Yeah, totally agree. I think that this is a move that is going to be good on a lot of different levels. Number one, just I listen to Don Callis talk about his philosophy on pro wrestling on Killing the Town. I listen to that show almost every week with Lance Storm. And I listen to his philosophy on pro wrestling and how he would run a company and what he thinks should be done and shouldn't be done. And it very much aligns with what I want to see when I watch a wrestling show. So that has me excited because I think that his philosophy and my philosophy, you know, align pretty well. And then at the same time, here's a guy who's, I think, can help some of the talent there. First of all, he can help the show. I mean, if they decide to use him as a color commentator, I'm all for it.
Oh, yes.
I'm usually not on board with authority figures putting themselves on TV, but if we get Don Callis on color, then awesome. Because I'm sure we'll talk about the announcing on this episode of Impact when we kind of run down the show later. But you and I were going back and forth on Twitter earlier. The voice of the show, Josh Matthews and Jeremy Borash, are just lifeless. There is no emotion. Sounds like Jeremy Borash tonight sounded like he wanted to be anywhere but calling that show. So if if it's just that, if it's just, hey, Don Callis is going to do color, I think it's great because I think he's really good on color for New Japan. But there's also the added part of this. It's not just that. You know, he's coming in to help run the day-to-day operations of the company. He's a guy who I think has a really good mind creatively, but also I think has some creative ideas on just how to run the day-to-day operations of a wrestling company. I think it's going to be completely different than Jeff Jarrett. That's obviously a good thing. I think this is going to be something – I mean, we've talked about new – Kylan from New Jersey is a regular caller with us. I feel like we've talked about new eras and new regimes creatively with Kylan probably four or five times in the last year. It's kind of crazy. But this is one that I think could actually work. You know, I don't know much about Scott D'Amore. You know, I haven't heard him on many interviews or anything like that. But I've heard Don Callis a lot, and if he's able to sort of insert his influence on the show, I'm really excited about it because I think that he's a guy that, you know, they're not going to get back to a million viewers overnight. They're not going to get back to a million viewers on the network that they're on now. But here's a guy, I think, Don Callis, who can get them moving both operationally and creatively, get them moving in the right direction.
Yeah, and it's not just that. Like, he is a name that will bring them some goodwill. You know, like Jeff Jarrett coming back was greeted with a lot of skepticism, and as it played out, that skepticism was fully justified. I mean, he just went back into his bag of tricks that he's always done. You know, he brought in former name wrestlers from WWE. He brought in Karen Jarrett as a central figure. There was just so many ref bumps and nonsense in their big title matches. And that's, you know, that's what Jeff Jarrett's been doing for years. So what this company needs is a different approach completely. And after Jarrett left, there was no approach at all. There was no vision. It just felt like random nonsense. Things have been better these past few weeks, but nothing that would get you excited about the future of this company in any way. So, yeah, Callis coming in for sure. I mean, like, he's got a great mind for the business. I'd love to hear him on commentary. Yeah, as you said, I mean, Borash is just reaching levels of just being completely brutal to listen to. Josh Matthews, I think, has finally just dove into being a babyface, maybe, from what I heard tonight. And it's just a mess. It's not entertaining. And they do need a new look, and they need a new sound. They need new stories. And yeah, so I'm pretty hopeful about this. I'm more hopeful than I've been in quite some time for this company. And I hope it just is not another thing that just completely falls on its face.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I think that, I think that, like we were saying, just on a number of different levels, this could be a good thing. And that's not to gloss over Scott D'Amore either. Right. I, like I said, I just don't know much about him. But, you know, I think the stories coming out of this last set of TV tapings in Ottawa, the one that we're kind of watching and in the middle of now, was that he had a lot of influence on these tapings. And I'll be honest with you, like, these impacts, Bound for Glory was an atrocity. But the impacts since Bound for Glory have all been pretty good. You know, even tonight's show, I wrote this at the end of my impact report on pwtorch.com. I wouldn't say anything about this show was great, but everything was solid and everything made sense and everything was kind of moved along in a somewhat logical way. There were elements of the show I didn't like. I didn't like the commentary one bit. And, well, like I said, we'll talk about that. But, you know, if Scott D'Amore is responsible for these impacts coming out of Bound for Glory, I think that he's righted the ship a little bit, or at least gotten the ball to stop rolling downhill the way it was going into that pay-per-view and during the pay-per-view. It feels like they're on better, or they've got better traction now than they did coming out of the pay-per-view. I mean, we talked after the pay-per-view, we did the live cast that night, and it was just like, oh man, what was that? Neither one of us, and I don't think anybody in general, liked that pay-per-view. But the impacts coming out of it since then have all been pretty good, I'd say. And Scott D'Amore has had, I would assume, a pretty big influence on those shows.
I think so, too. I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago on the live cast, but during the time that TNA was most creatively successful, whatever that is, means to people, that was back in like 2008, 2009-ish. That's when Dave Meltzer said, like, that's when the company was at its creative peak. Scott D'Amore, I think, was the head writer, booker of the promotion of that time. So, of course, that's not exactly really fantastic, glowing remarks, but he's, you know, done a better job with creative than just about anyone outside of probably Billy Corgan. and Dave Lagana, I would say. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, the thing with this company is that it's hard to get invested in anything because so much falls through and they have just nonstop financial difficulties. So, yes, I was excited about this news. But yeah, there's always this part of me that's like, okay, when's this going to fall apart? When's he going to leave the company? And when are they going to bring back Vince Russo or someone?
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand feeling that way. I mean, that's the way it's been. But this is also two straight weeks of some positive news coming from management. I know you and I talked last week about the change in their contract structure where guys are going to be allowed now to own their own intellectual properties. Great idea. You know, I think we both thought that was a really good idea. Now we're a week later, and they're bringing in someone like Don Callis. On another thing that we think is a great idea. So this is a couple weeks in a row of them making some what seems like pretty wise decisions. It almost kind of feels too that Ed Nordholm is taking a step back a little bit. I know, you know, I listened to Don Callis on Killing the Town this week, and he said that him and Scott D'Amore report to Ed Nordholm. Obviously, that's to be expected. But I think that being without Jeff these last few months, I think he's come to realize that, you know, he doesn't know how to run a wrestling company. He needs some guys that know how to do that. And Scott D'Amore and Don Callis now are the guys that I think he's going to be relying on to do so.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that's definitely better than in the past what they had. I mean, it was so weird. They would bring in Bruce Pritchard. We didn't know what he was doing. Mantell kind of showed that he maybe has not evolved with the times.
It seems like he's gone, too.
Yeah.
There was a report this week that he was gone or will be gone soon.
Oh, I hadn't picked that up. So let me ask you, I have not listened to this episode of Killing the Town yet. Was there any, did he drop anything interesting or did he have like anything newsworthy to say or what, any ideas he had in mind for this?
Not really, no. I mean, they made the announcement and he said he was excited to be doing it and glad to be back in wrestling full time. I read this week that he was actually running an investment firm in Manitoba, which I didn't know. But he was, you know, he made some jokes about, you know, trying to get Lance Storm involved as well, which another one I'd be all for. I think Lance Storm, the fact that he's not working for a major, and I know he likes running a school in Calgary, and he likes being home, and he doesn't like being on the road, but the fact that that guy is not involved in a major capacity with some wrestling company as a trainer or agent or creative or all three is a travesty, because I think he's another one that is just really, 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 really smart and can do a lot. I mean, I'll admit, I didn't see a lot of Lance Storm's career. You know, when he was in ECW, I didn't watch ECW till later. Like I picked up a lot of the episodes, you know, years down the road. So I didn't see his stuff in ECW. When he was in WCW, I was pretty much only watching WWE.
Ooh.
And then when he went to WWE after they bought the company, right around 2002, I kind of took like a 2-year hiatus from watching wrestling. I was just kind of – the invasion angle was getting so bad. I was sick of it, and I kind of went away for 2 years. I never really saw much of Lance Storm. But out of the blue, I watched a shoot interview from like 2009 – this would have been 2009, 2010, somewhere around there. And I was like, I just listening to him talk about his career. And I had never really followed his career, but just watching and listening to him talk about his career, talk about what he thinks wrestling the way it should be, I was finding myself going, yeah. Like, he's another one where I seem to agree with everything he says. So if they can somehow get him involved as well, I think it would be a great fit. Even if it's something as simple as a producer or an agent or something with creative. I mean, I think that he's another guy that can really, really help them. Just because every word out of his mouth, whether it's on Killing the Town or the other podcasts he used to do or in interviews I've read and heard him do, almost everything out of his mouth, I find myself nodding in agreement, just going, yep, that's correct, So I think he'd be a really good addition if they could find a spot for him, and he's willing to, I mean, it's not a ton of travel, but if he's willing to do it.
Yeah, because, I mean, he would only have to show up once every 6-7 weeks, so, at this point, I would be kind of surprised if he doesn't find some sort of role in the company. It looks like they're definitely moving very heavily Canadian. especially one of the tag teams that debuted tonight. They're just fully embracing that. But yeah, oh, and first of all, his WCW stuff was gold. Like, that's my favorite era of Lance Storm. But yeah,
I mean, he had three belts with Canadian Flags.
The Saskatchewan, yeah, cannot remember all of those titles, but one of my favorite characters during that terrible, terrible period of the company. But yeah, he's one of the few wrestlers I actually follow on Twitter, because most people in WWE are not interesting to me because they can't really say what's on their mind for the most part. They just kind of have to either play their character or promote all this upcoming stuff. But Lance Storm, you know, he just gives his feelings on the business and the industry. And I like you said, I find it really interesting. He just has a lot of great thoughts. He's funny, surprisingly, perhaps. And I think he would just be another excellent addition to the team and badly restore some of that goodwill that's lost, because, you know, they're down to 270,000 viewers, you know, every week. They need to bring back some of those hardcore fans. This brand is so badly damaged. Bringing in those two, giving them an effective role, and actually producing TV that isn't wacky and often terrible will go a long way to helping stabilize this thing.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
Here's another thing that we haven't talked about yet, but we alluded to it. Don Callis does color commentary for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Impact would like a working relationship with New Japan Pro Wrestling, kind of like what Ring of Honor has. I don't know if part of this is him using his role in New Japan as kind of a conduit to try to get some sort of working relationship done. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, you know, it certainly helps. Doesn't hurt, you know, that's for sure. When an executive vice president of the company is going to be going over to Tokyo to do the Tokyo Dome shows and do commentary for the company, I think that's a good sign. And there was reports out a couple of months ago that when Scott D'Amore was over in Japan, he went to a New Japan show, met with the locker room. I believe he actually publicly apologized to Okada. I think I read that he in front of
he
the
did.
Locker room.
Yeah.
And this is something, by the way, that he had nothing to do with.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't there when this happened, but on behalf of the company, he went and stood in front of the locker room and apologized to Okada for the way that he was treated when he was with TNA shortly. What year was that? 2000?
Oh, God, probably 14? 8-ish, 9-ish.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah. Oh, when Okada was in?
Yeah.
I want to say he was pre-Hogan Bischoff, but I could be wrong.
But I know, I mean, I think that's... that's pretty big. When a guy is not – he wasn't involved in the company. He wasn't booking it at that point. But he stood there in front of the entire locker room and apologized for the way he was treated. And then just – so now you've got that connection. Scott. Well, first of all, Scott D'Amore was invited to the show. He was able to speak in front of the locker room. So there must be some type of trust there. Now you've hired the guy as an executive vice president who's at almost every show, at least every big show, and he's doing color commentary. So – there could be – I mean, I could certainly see a scenario where a few months from now, maybe a year from now, they do have a working relationship with New Japan. And I think that would be big, because AAA is fine, Crash is fine, Pro Wrestling Noah is fine. To me, New Japan is what could bring in viewers. These other ones, not really. You partner with New Japan, you're able to bring in some of the New Japan guys, that's what's going to start to bring in some viewers. The way I think it's helped – build up the prestige of Ring of Honor here in the U.S. as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, New Japan was not that popular stateside, it seemed, a couple of years ago. It seems only in the past couple of years has it really meant something. And it took a while for that relationship with Ring of Honor and all, you know, bringing them in every week or, you know, for the TV shows, for it to actually mean something. And, you know, TNA has just bungled things up in the past so many times with so many different promotions that right now they're, you know, I don't think there's that many people out there who are going to subscribe to the Global Wrestling Network over AAA or over Defy or these promotions. But yeah, even if they can't get New Japan on their network, which would be a long shot since they have their own thing, just working with them in any form, yes, that would be another huge way to restore some of that lost goodwill. And again, that's exactly what they need right now. And I don't think their relationship with Pro Wrestling Noah is going to do it, especially the way they've been doing it over the past few months. So they need to make a big move like that. And if it's, you know, if it works out for them financially, that would be fantastic for them in the next, I don't know, year or so.
Yeah, even I think it would just be a sharing talent thing, and I think that'd be I think it'd be good for both sides. There's a lot of guys in Impact that I think would do really well in New Japan. I mean, Eddie Edwards would do really well in New Japan.
Oh yeah, yep.
Moose, Lashley, like those guys. Even El Patron, as much as I don't really like him, I think all those guys could go to New Japan and do really, really well. Mm-hmm. So it's something to be. You know, it hasn't happened yet, but it's something that I think we could see happen down the road, especially now where. You know, Scott D'Amore was obviously invited there, or at least was trusted enough to be backstage at a show. And they're open to Don Callis, you know, being able to do both roles. So I wouldn't be surprised if something like that were to happen in the future.
And it's really just cool that they recognize that fact, that they need to kind of make amends. Even though, like you said, D'Amore had absolutely nothing to do with that. Yeah, that was just such a brutal way to push him. And Okada's just, you know, one of the many, many stars that they could have made something out of. And just them recognizing that, apologizing for it, and wanting to establish relationships going forward is potentially going to be big and maybe profitable for them.
I mean, it's almost borderline depressing thinking of all the guys that have come through here that they failed to do anything with. It's just off the top of my head. Right now, they could have easily have had the Young Bucks.
Yep.
Cody Rhodes.
Yep.
Okada. you know, even I'd even go as far as saying Christopher Daniels and Kaz. I mean, who else? I mean, there's so many others. Motor City Machine Guns.
God, Seth. I mean, if you want to go way back, Seth Rollins had a dark match, or no, I think he had a TV match with them. Dean Ambrose had a TV match with them. I mean, there was just so many guys they could have stolen, or not even stolen, just signed over the years because Vince McMahon was very limited in his body types. Until just a couple of years ago. So they could have just had a completely stacked roster right now. I mean, yeah, go back even further and CM Punk could have had a lengthy run with them.
Yeah, so. And that's not even including like Samoa Joe and AJ Styles and Bucky.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like their roster could be loaded right now. Of course, you know, that didn't happen, but it's almost kind of depressing to look back and see the guys. Take the WWE guys out of it. Just the guys that aren't in WWE that are either Ring of Honor, New Japan, or doing their own thing that they had on their roster that could have been theirs. You know, this company could look a lot different right now if they went with those guys instead of going with the Nasty Boys. And you know what I mean? Like
Val Venus.
Yeah, like the whole company could look a lot different right now.
Yeah, this just kind of popped in my head. Shortly after Okada was written off of TV, I had definitely not written for the Torch yet or anything. I saw Samoa Joe at a house show, and they were kind of, I think, paired up on TV. And I was just being an idiot, and I'm like, Joe, I'm like, man, I'm so sorry about Okada. Is he going to be okay? He just gave me this look like, man, I know that's terrible. And he's like, yeah, man, I'm really worried too. But he was just like smiling through it because he recognized how awful they were pushing Okada. And yeah, he never showed up on TV again.
Yeah, it was not good. Not good.
No.
All right. Well, let's kind of break away. Actually, let's go into the commentary a little bit because we talked about Don Callis maybe being used on Impact commentary, which I know I'd be a huge fan of. Let's talk about the commentary in this episode of Impact, and then we'll kind of run down the show and get to some emails before we wrap it up, because we did get some people that emailed in. Even though we can't take calls, we can take emails. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the commentary. It's been something that we've discussed and complained about numerous times. You know, I can't believe, first of all, we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of this show.
Oh, wow.
We started in January, and we're almost there. So kind of crazy. But, yeah, pretty much since day one for the past year, you and I have complained about the commentary on an almost weekly basis. And it continues to be pretty bad. And I thought tonight was just another really bad episode as far as commentary goes. I like I said, I know we mentioned this earlier. I made the comment to you. It sounded like Jeremy Borash wanted to be anywhere but calling tonight's episode. He just seemed like, from the beginning of the show on, I mean, just like it felt like he didn't want to be there. let alone being bored. It felt like he didn't want to be there. And then Josh Matthews is what he is. But I'd much rather see them completely abandon what they have now and go with a completely new voice. And if that's Don Callis and someone like Kevin Kelly, who obviously was with WWE, he was with Ring of Honor, he's now Don Callis's partner on New Japan, I think that's far superior. Basically, I'm at the point, and I think, I don't know where you are with this, I'm willing to take anything but what they have now.
Yes. Yeah, like you said, that. I mean, I think Borash, I don't know if like it's just been beaten out of him, you know, and it's hard to blame him in a way, you know, for having to call so much bad TV and the creative teams keep changing and wrestlers keep coming in and storylines keep changing, wrestlers keep turning. I imagine even Jim Ross could not make this great TV, but he could make it for sure better. And I think, I don't know if Borash has just always been this bad or it's been beaten out of him or if he only has so much fake enthusiasm in him, because I always, for the most part, enjoyed him doing backstage segments. He used to do this, spin cycle show, which was kind of fun, back in the day, but yeah, he's not good in this role at all. He's, like you said, he sounds bored. It's not fun to listen to because there's just so many. I just imagine there's thousands of people out there right now who could jump in and do a better job on night one, or at least give more enthusiasm. I know wrestling is a hard thing to understand. You have to get the psychology of it and everything. So there aren't millions of people who can do it better, but there are definitely former wrestlers, you know, people who have watched it their entire life, people who have broadcasting experience who could jump in, quickly learn the storylines and what's going on and just do a better job. And if nothing else, he, again, has been this face of a bad product and he's only been doing it not even a year in this role, but it's been a terrible failed experiment. It's been really disappointing. I had fairly high hopes for him coming in, likable guy, but yeah, it's not good. Josh Matthews has never been good. On their best nights, they're a 5 out of 10, and they've often dove into twos and threes. It's something that needs to be fixed as soon as they can, really.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, I never thought I'd say this. I think Josh Matthews has been much better than Jeremy Borash.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, but the problem with Josh Matthews at this point is he's kind of become the narrator for the dark times of Impact. I mean, when he took over, it was the first Destination America episode.
Yep. Yep.
So that's when they went from 1 million viewers to 500,000. And then, so right off the bat, you know, the show took a huge, and it wasn't him, obviously.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah,
the perception, I think, is, okay, the show took a sharp turn downhill night one for him. Mm-hmm. And then since then, that audience has been cut in half with another network move. And he's been at the helm for some of the worst television that they've produced in the last several years. The Destination America run was terrible. I mean, I think 2016 on Pop was pretty good, but yeah, 2015 on Destination America was just bad. I mean,
brutal.
The last 3 months of 2015, there wasn't a single storyline match in the show. It was just not good. And now they've continued to do this, and I just think too many people associate his voice with bad times, bad feelings towards the product. So that's not even necessarily on him, really. Like I said, it's not his fault. He didn't destroy the place, but still, he's been the narrator for some pretty dark times. So why wouldn't you want to change that voice just to kind of give people the perception that it's different again, you know? I think getting a new voice – look, you can still keep Josh Matthews. You know, I'd even be willing to keep Jeremy Borash. I think Jeremy Borash behind the scenes is a valuable commodity. You know, I'd be even willing to say, okay, you know what? Digital, the internet, obviously social media, it's huge. You need to have a strong component. They seem to know what they're doing there. I'd rather them hire a new broadcast team, go with Kevin Kelly and Don Callis, okay? And then tell Josh Matthews and Jeremy Borash, everything digital is yours. It's your playground. Have fun. Anything you want to do on the YouTube channel, anything you want to do on the website, anything you want to do on social media, anything you guys want to do digitally, I would just tell them to take the digital aspect of the company and run with it. And then, you know, if you need to use the guys on TV still, you could use Josh Matthews as an interviewer backstage. You could use him as even a manager if you wanted to.
Yep.
But the play-by-play thing needs to stop. Or I don't even know what he is. He's kind of the color guy. But it needs to stop because Borash hasn't been very good. Matthews has been better, but I think too many people associate him with negative feelings toward the product. So I think you need to change the voice of the show. And I think if you do, it can drastically change the perception of the show just by having, you know, a new soundtrack behind it.
Agreed. Yeah. Like Matthews, yeah, I think he could be fine as a heel manager. On commentary, he's just not good enough at anything. He's almost okay as play-by-play. But he can't hit those high dramatic moments. On color commentary, he's not funny. He's just obnoxious, and not obnoxious in a good way. But again, you know, there's probably something he could be doing in the company. Like you said, digital, the internet. He seems like a crazy hardworking guy. And Borash, of course, had a hand in the Broken Universe. I think he directed all of those segments. And I'm guessing he's doing those like Park segments that are on TV now. Just give him that, you know, he's head director of every backstage segment. He can do backstage interviews. He can be their Gene Okerlund if they want. You know, he's the lovable guy that shows up backstage. But yeah, I'm trying to think in my mind if there's a worse commentary team. I would say like heel Michael Cole was worse and more grating. But besides that, just regular play by play and color commentary, I can't think of one off the top of my head. Can you?
No, not really. No. You know, it's even with Borash, like, I'd be okay keeping him as the ring announcer. I think when he does the ring announcer for the big matches and they show him, I mean, you don't see the ring announcer unless it's Jeremy Borash for a title match in the main event, but in that role, like, he's not bad. You could keep him doing the ring announcing. You could keep Josh Matthews as kind of your roving reporter. The Renee Young, for lack of a better term, the guy who's just the reporter guy. You know, he's out trying to get the news. He's doing interviews and playing it straight. And then have Jeremy Borash be your straight ring announcer. Both guys can have backstage duties running the digital aspect of the company, or like you said, with Borash directing some pre-tapes and things of that nature. But give the show a new voice. Give the show a fresh voice. I think that's the way they got to go.
Agreed. Yeah. And I mean, I like the fact that Borash is around. It's cool to have somebody there who's been there since the beginning, since Jarrett's gone, Jarrett's gone. Of course, Russo and so many other people. And him and Abyss are like the only two that have been there pretty much since day one. And so it's good to have some of that to tie into the past for longtime viewers. But yeah, he's not doing a good job, unfortunately, as the lead play by play.
All right, cool. Let's get to some emails. We'll go to the emails now, and then we'll come back and run down this week's episode of Impact and give you our thoughts on the whole show. But let's get to the emails first, and this one is from Cody in Louisiana. Cody says, "Hey, Mike and Andrew, I hope you guys are doing well. As it turns out, my New Orleans Saints are playing on NBC tonight, so I won't be able to watch Impact or call into the show. But I wanted to ask you guys a couple of questions about current happenings with Impact and its talent." Let's see. Cody says, "I asked Wade and Jason Powell these questions on Wade's podcast earlier today, but I also value your opinion as experts on this roller coaster circus as Impact Wrestling." So his first question, he's got two of them here. His first question is, "I'm sure you guys are going to talk about this at the top of the show, but I wanted to get your thoughts on Cyrus being hired as the new EVP at Impact, along with Scott D'Amore, or even if this will help Impact moving forward." You know, we talked a lot about that, obviously, at the start of the show, but I think we're both in agreement that this is a move and a positive step in the right direction. And I think you did say this, but yeah, I think I'd agree. The most excited I've been about a management change in a while, maybe ever.
I was excited when I heard Billy Corgan was going to be president of the company, and of course that lasted about 2 weeks. But when he was doing all these,
president.
But he was like doing all these interviews in the media suddenly, but that got me really excited. But yes, the first. So since then, so definitely, I don't know, top three, most excited. So yeah, I think it's going to be a good thing for them for sure.
Hello, you people. I'm Pat McNeil. Every Sunday night, Greg Parks and I will bring you Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Livecast. We're on at 8 p.m. Eastern most weeks, or immediately following the night's pay-per-view. We'll talk Raw, SmackDown, NXT, GFW, New Japan, Ring of Honor, WWN, and all the latest wrestling news with your phone calls. So don't miss it. Be there.
Cody's second question is, last week, Alberto El Patron appeared on Conan's Keep It at 100 podcast to tell his side of the story of all the events that happened between him and Paige within the last year. For the most part, it seemed like he was putting a lot of the emphasis on Paige's brother being a big part of the negative connotation on El Patron's name, and he also mentions that some of the incident reports that came out through the media about him and Paige were false. My question is, if you have had the chance to listen to him on the podcast, what do you think of his comments, and do you believe him? I did catch that interview last week. Did you happen to catch that El Patron interview on Keep It at 100?
I didn't listen to it, but I did read a recap of it.
So I guess I'll start with my thoughts, and you can tell me if you agree. I don't believe a word that comes out of his mouth.
Yes. that sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're just at a point with him where he has fabricated the truth to such a degree so many times that it's hard to believe him. You know, maybe some of what he says is true. I'm not going to tell you that none of what he said was true. You know, maybe her brother was a big part of it. I don't know. But
we all heard
the videotape. You know, he doesn't seem like he's a class human being. You know, I'll think that will put it nicely. He seems to have trouble with the truth. You know, I'm not going to say that it's all untrue, but I'm going to say that there's probably mistruths in what he was saying.
I mean, if nothing else, this is a guy that got stabbed, said it was a homeless person, and then the story changed like three different times. So that right there, there's definitely more to it. I have no idea what it is. But then, of course, there's just one thing after the other, just all these misunderstandings. I mean, he seems like he's in better spirits and maybe in a better headspace right now. But, I don't. And I that definitely could be true. I mean, Paige's brother could be a bad influence on her life. But at some point, you have to own up to your own mistakes. And it doesn't sound like he is ever going to do that, because I think he's 40. So you'd hope by now he could own up to some mistakes, but not happening.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it kind of feels like listening to him talk and the excuses that he comes up with, I feel like I'm having a conversation with my 7-year-old. Like, oh, you know, you got in trouble at school today. What happened? Well, it was this one who actually did it, and I didn't do anything. Or I got in trouble for talking, but it was really the person next to me, and she thought I was talking. Like, it's always someone else. Mm-hmm. We just had a conversation earlier tonight where I looked at him, and I said to him, look, at some point, you keep getting in trouble. It's not somebody else, okay? You know, it can't be that your teacher thinks that it's someone else, you know, every day this week, and it happens that you just, you know, that's not how it works. So clearly you're doing something wrong. You got to fix it. It's the same thing. Like, every single time this guy gets in a tiny bit of trouble, it's somebody else's fault. Or it's something that, oh, well, you don't actually know this, but this actually happened and it had nothing to do with me. Like, no, look, where there's smoke, there's fire. If you keep putting yourself in these situations where you keep getting into trouble, or trouble seems to keep finding you, now, you know, maybe at some point you're doing something to attract that, you know? I think it's far more him than he lets on. I have a hard time believing him.
Like you said, I wouldn't take his side on this.
I think it's good they're apart. I mean, look, I'm not a relationship expert, but that seemed to be a pretty toxic situation. So I think it's good that they're no longer, you know, together.
Yeah, she'll have to get that poppy tattoo removed from her hand, but
That's why I don't have any tattoos.
Yeah, me neither. Not yet.
Yeah, I never can commit to something long enough to put it, you know, to permanently put it on me somewhere.
Yeah, I'm not getting poppy anytime soon on me.
You gotta add that to your Twitter bio. subject, not getting Poppy put on me anytime soon.
There we go.
All right, we got one more email, then we'll get to running down the show. Tony in New Jersey. Tony doesn't have a question, although Tony's a regular emailer for us.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a question as much as a statement. He says, an overall good show with good wrestling. Now, if they could only keep that up and get rid of the bad storylines, bad segments, bad announcing, and overall look of the show, they'd be a good company. So, I thought this was a pretty solid show. I kind of agree with him. I thought the wrestling was good. I don't know what he means by the bad storylines. I don't think all the storylines that are going on right now are great, but I don't think it's as bad as it's been maybe like pre-Slammiversary. Mm-hmm. That's a good topic, though. What do you think of the storylines they have on TV right now? What's the one that you think is the kind of the dumbest? What's the one storyline they should just scrap without any explanation?
Oh, man, that's a great question. What would I scrap? It's not so much a storyline, but I really want Chris Masters away from Eli Drake. That pairing has never worked for me, and I think it's holding Eli Drake back. I just wish there was actually more storylines. Like, you know, the Knockouts division just feels very lackluster, and this tournament isn't clicking for me. Trevor Lee isn't – I love Trevor Lee, of course, or his work, but that's not clicking for me. His pairing with Caleb Conley, I'd like to see them apart. I don't know if I have maybe there's just one I'm missing that it's just not coming to mind. But what do you think? Is there one you just want to completely get rid of?
I'd completely get rid of the whole Allie thing. As much as people seem to still react, although they're in Canada, which could be part of the reason. You know, she's getting a good reaction, but I've never bought into the whole 3 months ago she didn't know how to throw a hip toss. Mm-hmm. According to the storyline, obviously she knew how to. But 3 months ago, according to the storyline, she didn't know how to throw a hip toss. Now she's upset because she lost her opportunity to challenge for the championship. And it's like, well, it should take more than 90 days to suddenly get yourself in position to challenge for a championship when you come from, like, not knowing how to wrestle, apparently, back when the storyline started. So yeah. I could do without that. I don't think her character has changed at all. I just wish that they would maybe give her some more aggressiveness or something. I mean, they showed a little bit of that tonight when she kind of attacked Rosemary, but still, like, she's just, everything's blah, everything's the same, and the whole idea that she's gone from never wrestling and not knowing how to wrestle to 6 to 8 months later, however long it's been, now she's potentially competing for the Knockouts title has just never clicked with me. I don't think it makes any sense, and I think it kind of diminishes people like Sienna and Taya Valkyrie, who will be back once they start taping in the U.S. again. I think it diminishes, where they are in the card. When you look at it and go, well, yeah, great. You know, she's one of the top Knockouts in the company. Awesome. Well, yeah, Allie didn't wrestle 3 months ago, and now she's, on a level playing field with these same women. I don't know. I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, I think Allie has not worked ever since Maria left.
Yeah, for me. Yeah, totally. Good point.
Which is a shame. I mean, she was the rookie of the year of 2016 in terms of that. But yeah, as soon as she left, and then the pairing with Braxton Sutter was bad, even though they're married in real life. They just didn't have any chemistry on screen with their characters. And it's hard. They just missed the boat on her, much like Bayley in WWE, where I think it's just you can't repair that childlike wonder or whatever, how you would phrase it. I think it's just over for that. I mean, you'd have to change your character, but I don't think you can go back to what she was.
I completely agree. All right, let's get to running down the show. And let me pull up my report to use as reference here. So they started the show with Taiji Ishimori beating Caleb Conley in about 6 minutes. After the match, Trevor Lee hit the ring and attacked Ishimori from behind. That kind of set up Desmond Xavier running in to make the save. What were your thoughts on this opener? I thought it was a pretty good opening match.
I thought so, too. You know, and one thing I think we rarely talk about, but WWE, I don't think a single episode of SmackDown all year has opened with a wrestling match. If two at the most. And this is something that Impact does almost every week, which I think is a positive. It shakes things up. You don't always have to wait for this 15-minute segment to just slow things down and set up the night. Sometimes you just want to get into the action. The match was good. Caleb Conley isn't working for me at all. Good wrestler. Just they've never really like given us a reason to care about him one way or the other. And Ishimori is one of the bright spots in the promotion right now. The crowd seems to be into him, despite the fact that we know very little about him and he's not cutting promos. But I think he's one of the most entertaining people to watch right now in the ring in the promotion. And I'm looking forward to that match with Trevor Lee.
Yeah, me too. I was a big fan of Ishimori, really, when he came in over the summer. I thought he was doing good work then, and I've been a big fan. I thought he was good in this match. I think he's somebody, like you said, that match with Trevor Lee is going to be a good one. I hope they give it a story. I'll say this, though, too. It kind of feels like they're finally giving the X Division a little bit of a story, as opposed to just, here's the guys that are going to fly around the ring and do a bunch of high spots. Let's just throw them together and let them do that. You know, Trevor Lee and Ishimori, this has been something that they've been building to, and it kind of seems like they're actually going to give them a storyline here as opposed to just throwing them in the ring and saying, just go jump around and do your thing.
Yeah. I mean, it would still be nice to see the X Division over the past few years has basically only revolved around either giant six-man matches or whoever has the title and their one storyline. So it would still be nice to see some of the other wrestlers have their own storylines and being able to weave in and out of title matches. But hey, maybe that'll happen in the new creative regime. But I think that's probably one of my bigger nitpicks for them at the moment.
All right, let's go to the next match. They went to commercial. They kind of reset the show at the announce table. They went to commercial. They came back from the break and went right into the second match of the show. So we're 15 minutes into the broadcast. We're already into our second match. This was the other triple threat semifinal in the Knockouts title tournament, Sienna, Rosemary, and Allie. Rosemary gets the win in about 6 minutes. She pinned Allie after a red wedding. There was that spot that I talked about earlier where Allie and Rosemary kind of traded forearms. It was like, okay, Allie's got a little bit of a mean streak here. This is good. And there were some bigger spots in the match. I think Sienna hit a superplex on Allie off the top. But this match was the one in particular where I felt like the announcing was just going off the rails. Like, Jeremy Borash didn't seem like he was excited about anything that was happening in this match at all. And this is where I really started to notice. And I thought it was noticeable in the first match. The second match, this is the one that they've been building it up. It's a triple threat, semifinal, Knockouts title tournament. And it was just, even the superplex. I think on the superplex, Borash's play-by-play was just, and that's a superplex by look at the landing. What a superplex by Sienna. Said with the same inflection that I just used. No emotion. And this is where it was starting to drive me crazy.
Yeah, the moves are where it's just completely baffling. He doesn't sell the effect of that at all. It's just so weird. The match itself, it was fine. I guess, pretty good for 6 minutes. But yeah, there's just so much more you can talk about here. Sienna wants her title back. How is this going to work? Allie's got this mean streak going. Rosemary has been losing a lot lately, but she's coming back with a vengeance. And they just don't really seem to play that stuff up much. It just all feels really tossed together, and the announcers have no enthusiasm. So it's just completely forgettable. I mean, by next week, you'll have completely forgotten all about this.
What did you think of them keeping Sienna out of the title match with Laurel Van Ness? I mean, it kind of makes sense. Laurel and Sienna aren't really aligned anymore. That partnership has kind of gone by the wayside. They haven't acknowledged it on TV. But I like the fact that they're keeping Sienna out of this match because I think they can obviously go back to her. So this gives them a heel to kind of be on the chase a little bit. They don't just blow it all out of the water right away with Sienna back in the title picture and winning the title back right away. You kind of give someone else the ability to go in and win the championship, and then you have a built-in challenger right away with Sienna.
I like it quite a bit, mainly because I'm much higher on the Rosemary character. She proved that she could connect with the fans in the Impact Zone. Definitely one of the most popular acts there. And I'm just Sienna. It might just be me, but I've never really cared for Sienna. A fine wrestler. I never bought her for a second on the microphone. I don't know what it is. And again, that might just be me. But I just find her vastly over pushed when she is the centerpiece of the Knockouts division. I think she's fine at everything, but just she doesn't get me excited to see one of her matches. But how do you feel about her?
It's hard to say, you know. Yeah. This is going to be overstating it, but she kind of reminds me of Bret Hart.
Interesting.
I like her matches. I like her style. I like her matches, but yeah, the promos kind of leave something to be desired. And the whole I don't get the whole pinky thing.
No. I don't get that either.
Like, it's never really connected with me. I think it's supposed to be like an arrogance type thing, but you know, I'd much rather see her, especially because she has like an MMA background. Like, I'd much rather see her as just a kick-ass heel,
yes,
who's going out there and beating people up because she can. I think that might be more effective than this arrogant, pinkies up, you know, high class kind of thing. I'd much rather kind of see her cast in that light. But yeah, it might be a bad comparison because Bret Hart's one of the best wrestlers to ever walk the planet. But you know, that's what I thought of Bret, you know, especially in the late '90s, late in his WWE run and into his WCW run. He could put on good matches, but his promos were just kind of like meh. And Bret Hart in WCW might be the best comparison. He could still he could still wrestle, he could still put on good matches, but there was no character there. And part of that was the fact that his promos just weren't very good.
I find her to be like a mix between heel Charlotte at her worst when she's super cartoonish and talking about peasants and stuff like that, and Nia Jax, in the sense that I've never bought into Nia Jax as a killer because she just like always smiles and she looks so happy. So for me, she's like both of those two combined. And I think she's talented. I don't get this character, and I've never been into it.
So next week, it'll be Rosemary against Laurel Van Ness for the Knockouts Championship. Then we came back from a break, and we had our first in-ring promo of the night. They waited till the third segment, which was good. Don't put it in segment one like WWE. That's a real terrible way to start a show. This was Sami Callihan. He was doing most of the talking. He was doing your typical heel stuff. He insulted Canadians, and okay. I don't know. I wasn't a big fan of this promo. There was a lot of yelling and screaming for no apparent reason, which I'm never a big fan of. But it brought out TDT, a new tag team that were kind of dressed as lumberjacks. And Jeremy Borash said that they are local heroes. And then Callihan told TDT to, quote, speak American because they were in his ring. And then they brawled. You know, the teams brawled. TDT got the upper hand. Callihan hit the ring with a kendo stick. That kind of made the save for OBE. Beat down TDT with the kendo sticks. And then LAX hit the ring to save TDT and ran off OVE. So the one thing I learned from this segment is to be a tag team in Impact Wrestling, you need to only go by three letters. Because we now have OVE, TDT, LAX, and they've even referred to the Veterans of War as VOW. So unless you're only known by three letters, you have no chance of getting over as a tag team in Impact Wrestling because all of the tag teams have three letters.
That's a great point. this was goofy for me. Like you said, Callahan's promo. I've been high on Callahan. I think he's added a lot to OVE. This was generic wrestling promo 101. And then TDT? Is that what it was?
TDT.
Like, that was just goofy.
I don't know if they told us what it stood for.
No, I don't think they did. I mean, it seemed like way too big of a push for two guys that 99% of the people have no idea who they are.
Exactly. No clue.
Yeah, that was just way too big of a spot for them to get involved in all that. I assume they were coming out and they were going to lose a 30-second squash match. I didn't know that they had bigger plans for them. So it was very interesting, because I don't like when WWE is like super, super, super pro America storylines, because it's like, well, what's the rest of the world supposed to feel like this? And it was like, oh, now it's my turn. what do I care about this? I thought that was a pretty weak spot of the show.
Exactly. Sami Callihan's insulting Ottawa. Okay. Great.
I've never been there.
I guess. It's kind of WWE does that every once in a while too, with not just with the like U.S. and foreign, you know, heel type stuff. But we've seen them go into shows where they go into the town, they just start like insulting the hometown sports team, and it's like, okay, they're in New York and they're making fun of the, you know, the New York Giants. Great, I don't care.
Exactly.
You know, so it's weird.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
I still don't get OVE either. I mean, they're clearly heels now, but
not yeah.
What? Why is it Ohio versus everything? Have they ever explained what that means? Am I missing it?
Never. Never have they ever. And I thought last week Callahan was a babyface in that Defy match, or did I? Maybe I gauged that wrong.
No, he kind of worked as a babyface. Also, does this mean that the entire state of Ohio are heels?
Oh, jeez. Never thought about that.
It's Ohio versus everything, and the whole thing is that Ohio's great and everybody else stinks. Well, does that just mean like the entire state? Anyone that comes out of Ohio is a heel?
It's like Drew Carey is a heel?
Cleveland rocks.
Man.
According to the song.
That's a giant stable. I don't know how many people live in that state, but
yeah, no kidding, right? All right. Well, after that, they went to commercial break. They came back. Allie was trying to leave the building. Gail Kim stopped her. Allie was upset. She said that this was her only shot at the Knockouts title. Gail gave her a pep talk and gave her a hug and told her it was her time. The one funny note that I have written down about this segment, because whatever, it was what it was, a little backstage thing. This is when my issues at home with my heating system started to pick up. And my wife noticed. I didn't even notice it. I got to give credit to my wife here. She noticed it. She wanted to know why Gail Kim called Allie bro. She goes, that doesn't make any sense. She's not a bro.
Oh.
Yeah. I guess.
I didn't catch that.
She called her a bro. And she was like, that sounds weird. She's not a bro. And I was like, yeah, you know what? It does.
Huh. Yeah. I think it's too soon to have Gail Kim come back. I mean, she's only been gone 2 weeks. And
she just gave up the title 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that was, you know, have that mean something if she's going to show up on TV. The other thing was that there's, what, four women in this company right now? I mean, Madison Rayne's not in it, so you'll get your title shot soon enough. Just win one match, and you'll be back into it.
It's kind of like the tag team championship.
Exactly.
I mean, think about it. They had two triple threat matches in semifinals, and they had to bring in Madison Rayne because they didn't have anybody else on the roster.
Yep, and the other woman from Border Championship Wrestling, I can't remember her name.
Spinelli? Casey Spinelli?
Yeah, Casey Spinelli, there you go. Four women right now who can compete. Yeah.
And part of that, you know, is Taya Valkyrie couldn't get over the border.
Yeah.
I'm sure, well, she could. She was afraid she wasn't going to get back in. There was also issues, I think, you know, I'm sure they didn't bring everybody to Ottawa. You know, people that they think were going to use some of the newer women that they had been bringing in, if they didn't think they were going to use them. I mean, they had basically only been using them as enhancement talent on TV, but at least they would have been faces that we'd seen before. If they didn't think they were going to use them, they kept them home. But still, like you said, it's not a very deep roster. It's kind of like the tag team division as well. You know, it's OVE and LAX. That's what I got a kick out of them fighting for the tag team championships again and again and again. They're the only two teams in the roster.
I guess the Lumberjacks now.
Yeah, Oh, that's true. TDT.
Maybe they'll come in. Maybe Veterans of War will come invade Canada for a bit.
There you go.
I don't know.
All right. Then they went to the Grand Championship match. Matt Sydal tried to win the title from EC3. This match ended in a draw. EC3 won the first round. Matt Sydal won the second round. The third round was scored a draw. One weird thing about this, for some unexplained reason, Falapa was a judge. As far as I know, this is the first time that they've had an active wrestler on the roster be a judge in the Grand Championship match. But yeah, and I had some things going on at home. My heating system was sending smoke into my house, so we were trying to scramble around a little bit. I had to still the show on, but it was in the background. Did they explain why Falapa was a judge? I know they acknowledged it. Like they
did acknowledge it, yeah.
They showed him. But this is the first time an active wrestler is a judge. I don't think they ever said why that was happening.
Unless they did in passing, when I was jotting down notes or something, but I didn't catch it. That's something. One, don't do it. Two, if you're because you know he just lost a match to EC3, so why would the management team put him in there? Because that's he's going to be vindictive.
Exactly. That's another good point.
Yeah, that just makes a mockery out of the entire thing, which this division is already just on life support. And second, if you're going to have him in there, you need like some sort of storyline setup. Just 30 seconds backstage, the regular judge got beat down and Falabah's the only one, within sight. So he's got to go in. But yeah, just to say that he's qualified to do it is just the whole thing's a farce. And then why bother doing it in the first place?
The other thing I thought about this match, the finish stunk. I mean, the draw, they're obviously doing something here, but the draw just felt flat. You know, you just wrestled. These guys were just in the ring for 9 minutes of wrestling, 3 3-minute rounds, plus intros, plus time in between rounds. So you got 12, 13 minutes of TV time invested into this. You ended it in just a really flat finish with a draw that nobody really seemed to care about. Didn't like it. I thought the finish stunk.
Yeah, it's I know I've said it a few times, but it's time to get rid of this division. Unless you'd have to bring in somebody new who has a completely unique style, and even that, put them in a different division. But the way they're doing it now, it makes no sense, and it doesn't lead to entertaining TV.
Then Bobby Lashley and Dan Lambert. That's right, American Top Team owner Dan Lambert partnered with Bobby Lashley, and they beat Moose and James Storm. The match ended after Lashley hit a spear on Storm. Lambert blind tagged himself in. As Lashley was going for the spear, Lambert slapped him back, got the tag. Lashley hit the spear. Lambert got the cover for the win. Considering that this match could have been an absolute train wreck, I didn't think it was terrible. I'm not going to tell you that it was good, but I didn't think it was terrible, considering I thought this had the potential to just be an absolute train wreck. And I'll say this, too. I liked the finish. I thought the finish was good and kind of could maybe set up some dissension between Lashley and American Top Team.
I would say that, too. I would say it was fine, which is much higher than I would have guessed going into it. America's Top Team, I don't think I'm as down on him as maybe some people are. And Neck Brace Guy, who is now Head Bandage Guy, is definitely a guilty pleasure at the moment. I hope they continue with that. I think Dan Lambert's still doing good work. And eventually, I guess Bobby Lashley's going to have to break out on his own and go to war with these guys, which I have no idea how that's going to play out, because the other big piece in the group is King Mo, and I don't think King Mo versus Lashley is going to do much, and Lambert versus Lashley will just be a Ultimate Warrior versus Bobby Heenan, I guess.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is where's Lashley going to go from here? So, like, when he breaks away, if he's going to stay with the company, when he breaks away, I don't know if there's any way to get him to break away without making him a babyface.
Exactly.
I kind of feel like the logical ending to this is Bobby Lashley snaps and tells American Top Team to go screw, and he starts spearing everybody. There's a segment where he just spears them all, and then finally lines up Dan Lambert, hits Lambert with the spear, and that sends American Top Team off, and we never see him again. Well, if he does that, he's a babyface. So I don't know if you really want him to be a babyface right now. I think he's better as a heel, and I think they kind of need him as a heel.
I think so, too. I mean, the most disappointing thing about this storyline, I think at the moment, is just like Bobby Lashley never gets to talk. He just seems like a background character to Dan Lambert, whereas I wish they were treated more as equals and given equal time on the mic. And I think that would be a really successful pairing and just run with that for a year and then finally have him snap. But at the moment, he seems way more valuable as a heel, because then you can go into Johnny Impact versus him, which is probably one of the two or three biggest matches they can give right now.
Yeah, I mean, if he were to go babyface, he could work with El Patron, but he's already worked with El Patron. and he can work with Eli Drake, and he's already worked with Eli Drake. So
yeah,
where is there to go with him? I mean, all you've got if you turn him babyface, the two biggest matches you have if you turn him babyface are two matches you've already done. It just has the roles flipped and reversed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that's really going to get anybody too excited.
No, I mean, hopefully with Callis coming in, maybe they're able to bring in some new wrestlers because, yeah, they're going to definitely need some fresh matchups here soon when a couple of these angles run their course.
Yeah, absolutely. Then they went to the main event, and it was Johnny Impact and Petey Williams getting the win over Christopher Adonis and Eli Drake. Alberto Patron came out through the crowd after the match and attacked Drake, gave him a DDT on the global championship, and that's how the show went off the air. What were your thoughts on this main event? I thought the match itself was actually pretty good. The finish was good. You know, I mean the post match angle. I thought the post match stuff was pretty good. You know, there's a reason why El Patron was going to attack Eli Drake. That being said, he apparently has a ton of heat with Johnny Impact, and now just doesn't seem to care about that.
Yeah, that kind of stood out to me as well, because that's been the most heated rivalry, I guess, over the past few weeks. They've been trying to build it as that. Yeah, the match itself was pretty good. Again, nothing too memorable, nothing you will go out of your way to tell friends about. Something about this isn't clicking. I mean, I talked about Chris Adonis, Chris Masters before. I think he's overpushed in this role, and I want to say I like Petey Williams, but the way they're going about him, it feels like an overpush as well, unless they're actually going to let him speak, be on the mic, maybe, you know, talk about, you know, his journey or something. But just having him randomly keep popping up like this, it doesn't feel natural to me. And it's just a very mishmash of a main event. I like that they're trying to push new guys, but I don't know. It's not quite working for me. How about you?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, this is another instance, too, where it's heel on heel.
Yeah.
You know, you get El Patron attacking Eli Drake unless they're going to turn Eli Drake. And I don't think that they should do that either. I think Eli Drake's going to be a really good babyface down the road. Not right now.
That's at least a year away, I would say, for me, if I was making the call.
Yeah, me too. But I don't see why the people are supposed to dislike both these guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a big match. El Patron and Eli Drake is a big match, and El Patron relinquished the title, and he wants a title match, and I think ultimately we're going to see that match happen. But you need to give people somebody to care about, and right now, nobody cares about either of these guys as babyfaces. They want to see them both lose, and I'm not sure that that's really the way you want to go. I mean, you can do a babyface match, and it can work because there's these guys in the ring where people want to see win. I mean, I like it from a realism standpoint. Not everything is babyface versus heel. You know, if this was a real sport, at some point two heels would end up facing each other. It's how it would work. So I'm okay with it. I kind of like it even from that perspective. But, you know, I'm not sure that the angle, the way they portrayed it tonight worked, because that was putting sympathy on Eli Drake, and I don't know why you'd put sympathy on Eli Drake unless you're turning him.
Yeah, it seemed that way to me, too, that I didn't really like how – it didn't make me more intrigued for what's going to happen next, because I don't really want to see an Eli Drake El Patron feud. I mean, it's just too bad that they don't have pay-per-views or more regular ones, so then you could have just held off on El Patron and Johnny Impact and not have to throw that away on TV without much build. So just the pacing is so difficult at the moment that they're mixing all these storylines that feel rushed and just feel kind of muddled at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather see them just kind of go with El Patron versus Eli Drake, just set the match and go with it. You know, the post-match angle, the way it was, was treating Eli Drake like he's a babyface, and that's where that's where it lost me. That's where I think it's going down a path where maybe they shouldn't be going down this path, because maybe inadvertently you're going to have people start to give Eli Drake that babyface reaction. And if you really want to keep him as a heel, I don't see why you don't want to cast him in any type of sympathetic light if you want to keep him as a heel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I completely agreed. They have their work cut out for them. Just in order to make this make sense and give some intriguing matchups out of it. But yeah, it's just too mixed up at the moment.
So we usually start the show with this, but give this episode a score out of 10.
I'm going to guess – sounds like you and the emailers are higher on this one than me. I'm still – I went 5 last week. I think I'm just going to go 5.5.
That's – yeah, I am a little higher. I'm going to go – you know, I'm going to go 6.5. I think it was – you know, 6.5 is a 65 out of 100. That's a solid D. Mm-hmm. You know, it's passing. It's
right.
Passing, and it's solid. Yeah. It's not solid. It's actually, if I'm going to say, and I thought it was solid, so maybe I got to go 7. 7's a 70. So. You know, 7's a 70. That's a C grade. You know, in the academic world, so it's solid. Wow. It's not great, but it's solid. It'll get you by. You can live with C's and get through school. So yeah, I think I'd give it. I think I'd give it a 7. But I say that nothing about the show was great, and everything about it was just kind of good and solid and okay. Mm-hmm. They need to find a way to give us some great moments, though. I thought the show was good. I thought the show was solid. I don't think you can have a show like this every week, or you're going to lose people because nothing big and exciting happened. You need something big and exciting to happen. At some point, you can have shows like this where it kind of builds and everything's a little slower, and nothing really of note, you know, any big things of note happen. But at some point, you need to give people something big, some sort of big shock and surprise, or else people are just gonna tune out.
Yeah, yeah. My 5.5 is just like, yeah, it was fine. I didn't love anything. I didn't hate anything. There was no Shane McMahon on here, you know, bringing it down to a 2. But then again, there was nothing where it's like, oh my god, what's going to happen next week? So it's fine. You know, it'll give you your wrestling fix, and it won't insult your intelligence really, and it won't piss you off. It's just a decent TV dinner. I would say.
There you go. No, I like that. That sums it up pretty well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else you want to add before we wrap up this week's pre-recorded cast?
No, I don't think so. If you want to follow me on Twitter, go right ahead at Andrew Socek, Souceck. Check out PW Podcast. If you'd like to read more wrestling recaps from big podcasts in the wrestling industry. Otherwise, I should have the Impact Hits and Misses probably up tomorrow. Yeah, this is more of a tough one because, yeah, again, there was nothing I was super passionate about either way. So I'm going to have to look at your recap once again and just pick out a few things that stood out.
You can check out my Impact Report at pwtorch.com. You can also go VIP at pwtorch.com/goVIP. You can listen to Andrew and I every Thursday on the PW Torch Livecast. We'll be back in the regular livecast position next week. Like I said, I had a couple of things come up at home tonight that prevented me from being able to go on the air at 10. So Andrew and I are recording this a little later in the evening. But we'll be back on the livecast next week taking your calls at 515-605-9345. Again, you can email the show at impactlivecast@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW. And that does it for this week's I'm going to call it the pre-recorded cast. I feel we can't call it a live cast. We're not live. So that'll do it for this week's PW Torch Thursday live cast post-Impact. Andrew and I will talk to you next week as soon as Impact goes off the air.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.